You're listening to the Camp Nation podcast. Find us online at campnation.ca.
Welcome to the Camp Nation podcast number 12, the one where we check your references. Today's episode features our discussion on tiered pricing for your camp. Thanks for listening. Good day and welcome to Camp Nation 12 for the first week of June 2010. My name is Travis Allison, and I'm the social media manager at Our Kids Media. And I was a camp director for 15 years at Glenmore Camp and Cairn in Muskoka, Ontario.
Hi, my name is Dan Weir. I'm the director of Camp La Leonda, which is at Frost Valley YMCA, and it's a year-round camping, conferencing, education facility up in the Catskill Mountains of New York.
My name is Gabrielle Rail, and I'm one of the directors at Camp Warrow, and it's an all-girls camp situated in the Laurentians, and I'm talking to you guys from Montreal.
And my name's Joe Richards, and I'm at Pierce Williams Christian Center, which is a summer camp and retreat center in southwestern Ontario, about half an hour outside of London, Ontario.
Awesome. Thanks for joining me, you guys, and thanks publicly for hosting the show without me when I was away for my grandmother's funeral. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem.
I wanted to start out with, we talked about this before we got recording, but I want to start out with how things are going in your camp world now. So why don't we go in reverse order. Joe, how's life at Pierce Williams these days?
Life is good. Spring staff started the beginning of May here, and our spring staff do a lot of maintenance work in May. Because we're a year-round center, we don't have a ton of, you know, opening to do because we're open year-round. But right now, the pool is empty, and we're scraping it, getting ready to paint it. Everything around camp is looking great, and we're getting ready to celebrate our 50th anniversary shortly, so there's a bit of a hectic pace for that. Staff hiring's done. Staff training starts tomorrow night for us, so that's where I'm at camp.
Right on. Gab, how is your camp life?
Good. We just had one of our staff training just this past weekend, over the May long weekend, for some of those staff members that can't make it up to pre-camp. So we had sort of that intense four-day boot camp type training. It's a good prep, you know, because I bring up some of my leadership team and those that have never done staff training before. So it's good prep for them. So, and it's a good, like, prep for me, just sort of getting my head back into it and everything. So I think it was a very good weekend, but I'm very grateful to sort of have that warm up. And then I come back home for a week, and then we start, I head up on Monday. So very soon we start with our open house and our leadership team training and then our staff training. So I'm very psyched about it, actually. Really nice weather right now, so much different than last. We had hail coming down on us last year, and we had some snow around camp, and right now it's just beautiful weather, so it's kind of promising.
That's great. Dan, how's your camp life?
It's not bad. I was talking earlier about how I definitely feel like I've moved to the 6 days on, 1 day off schedule, and I've been doing a ton of reference checks and just – I feel like I've been on the phone a lot with that and just kind of going back and forth with people. And then otherwise, since we're a year-round facility, a lot of schools love coming up at the end of May, beginning of June for their kind of their end-of-the-year trip, and they kind of hold it over their kids' heads that, like, if they do well, they could go over to Frost Valley and all sort of things. So we've been kind of helping them go along, whether it's kind of getting out there teaching a class or doing some luggage or that sort of thing. We revamped our out-trip center, so I got to put together a whole bunch of tents and make sure we had all our poles together and everything. So that was a fun day. But yeah, that's really been my recent weeks.
And how are the bugs out there, like, this time of year for you guys? Is it generally tolerable? Or?
We're not like Maine where it's like just awful.
Yeah.
But there's definitely black flies out, and I don't get bit too much. I joke it's because I take a garlic vitamin for my heart, but my wife definitely has, like, bites all over her in that sense. But they go away, like, right before camp starts. Like, literally, like, the last week in June, they pretty much all go away. And it's great. Like, I'm not complaining then. There's definitely a few around, but it's nothing what it's like right now.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I rode my bike the other day and literally was just kind of hitting my face.
Yeah.
So.
Dan, I want to come back to your reference checks because we started that discussion and said we'd put it on hold for one recording, but I was going to answer my own question about how my camp life is going, and my camp life has been not all that existent. I was up at Cairn for the first weekend in May. Is similar to what you do, Gab. Although it's mandatory for everybody to come up to camp for the weekend for an orientation and training, and it's really just the get to know you part of things. It's not
right.
All the hardcore lessons. It mm-hmm. sort of just establishes things, you know, the mood of being on staff for the summer. And it's weird to be there and not be a part of the planning, although I've been there the last 2 years when Beth was involved. So neither one of us was involved in the planning. And Beth decided to let them, you know, have a chance as the new directors to be there without her. So it was just me that went up. And I went up and took portraits, 70 portraits of the staff that'll go on website, and we usually make a video of it. And then there's a big board when people come in that I can see sort of who people are and what they do. So I was up there shooting those. But that weekend at camp was freezing. It was incredible. I left Saturday night after dinner, and I left in a blizzard. And there was snow on the ground. It was crazy weekend.
It's like welcome to camp, right?
Exactly. So, Dan, you're struggling to get job references then.
I kind of break people references. It's like one third will, you know, pick up the phone right away and will talk to me and have no problem. The second third, I have to place like a second call, and they're like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I haven't called you back." You know, like I definitely want to give a reference to the person. And then the other third, I feel, is just this endless phone tag slash like, and most of the references from my younger staff are teachers, so trying to get a hold of them. I hope there's not teachers that listen when I say this, but like it's almost near impossible. And I joke that I take out my aggression on my wife, who's a teacher, when I come home of like, "Why don't you guys answer the phone?" you know, just I understand, you know. Yeah, how it's not part of their normal work day, but I've definitely been having some issues with that. But when I get them on the phone, like, "Oh yeah, they're great." So like, it's just difficult because you can't always assume that not hearing back means that it's a bad reference. And I've definitely have had that hiccup with a lot of references.
So these are your last references before you send a contract to the staff, or your
No, we when we send the contract, we say it's pending their mm-hmm. references. And so it's not a big deal. And usually, like 9 times out of 10, nothing ever comes up. But you always do it for that 1 time out of 10. And we're pretty unique in the sense that we check the references of all of our employees. So I have some employees that I've actually known since they were 10. Like I was their camp counselor when they were 10 years old. And I know them better than their reference. But I still have to check their reference. And we need 3 references, preferably 2 professional, 1 personal. So I've talked to parents about their own kids for references as well, too. But yeah, it's just we kind of take that extra precaution. So.
That's a great sort of side psychology thing. Are you talking with the parents? It's kind of like, yeah, this is real. This is a real job,
right?
You know, it's kind of a neat way.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it definitely sets in. It's fun asking the question though. Would you trust your child, your own child, underneath their care? They're like, "Oh, I can't." Yeah, I think so. I think I would. So, but yeah, well, I mean, when I get people on the phone, it's great. But it's just, yeah, I don't know if it's a Northeast thing or whatnot. But people are not picking up the phone like they used to.
I don't know. We have a similar type experience, so it is frustrating, especially when Dan, like you said, you're definitely feeling that schedule that, you know, 6 days on, 1 day off, and part of that time is being, you know, spent on trying to get in touch with people. It's frustrating because you're just like, "Oh, you have so much to do. I've got tents to put up."
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. Well, I joke that the third reference I leave, I'm like, "Hi, this is Dan Weir. You know, I've called you a few times now. I'm just trying to get a hold of you for a reference. I can't process this application without hearing from you. So I will talk to you later." And like, it's just like this ominous, like, "I'm coming after you for this reference. You will give me this reference."
I lost Joe, but he was starting to talk about it. The reason we started the recording when we did is because Joe was starting to tell an interesting story about what it's like for him and how he just gets to the point where he personally has realized that it's not worth his effort to keep with staff members who don't follow through on the hiring stuff.
Yeah.
That it's not worth his time. I'm hoping we'll get him back that he can talk about that. But it made me think about it's part of that process. He was talking about the frustration of staff sort of just not showing up or just calling at the last minute and saying, well, I'm not coming. Certainly one of my great frustrations as a director is that exact thing. And one thing that we did to sort of combat that is between offering a job and sending a contract, we had a staff commitment form, because sometimes contracts would be a month between the offer and when it would, the contracts would arrive. So within a week, they had to sign back the staff commitment form. And that commitment form basically said, I have stopped looking for a job. I'm committing to taking this, and yeah. I'm not going to keep looking for a better summer job. That has cut out a little bit of frustration, I think, with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think it's very proactive. We've done something similar to that, and that's really helped. I mean, we still have some staff sort of last minute being like, oh, but I did apply for this job. I didn't think I was going to hear from them, you know, type thing, and that's frustrating. But we also did, Dan, for the references, we try to contact the reference once, and if we don't hear back, contact them twice, and if we don't hear back from them within 3 days, then we contact the person that we're hiring and say it's up to you to get in touch with this person by this date.
Yeah.
And so we've let it go, because I think it was a sort of an unnecessary frustration on our part, and I just didn't want to deal with it, and I figured, well, they have a better chance getting in touch with this person than we do. So we do make the the initial, we do it twice, and then we say, okay, it's up to you, do it by this date, or find another job. We say it in a nice way, but
I've just started doing that, and it's I feel like it's starting to work. That it's either that or the third voicemail where I'm just like, I will talk to you, or their employee getting back to them. But one thing we kind of found that it's actually we started doing the expert online training, and I've actually found it's been a great way to kind of keep tabs on staff that might be a flight risk, because if they haven't made an account and are not watching any videos and not taking any of the quizzes, I've actually had one person back out because of the emails I was sending of it. They're like, I was mean to tell you anyway, but like, who knows when they were actually going
to
tell me?
Yeah, same thing happened to us. I never thought of it as a sort of a prompt too, but. We had the exact same thing happen where we were emailing this one individual, and then she finally said, actually, I think I might have something else this summer.
Yeah. Lovely. Lovely.
I just don't deal in phone calls.
What do you mean?
We've moved to, and years ago, this is years ago, like early 2000s, there was a camp that had asked one of our camp directors to fill in an online reference form. And what she did is she went there, and it was for a staff we weren't hiring back, and she filled it out and just submitted it, and that was the reference. And it got me to thinking, okay, well, the best way for us to do references would be for me not to have to do any phone tag. And so what we have is an online application where they submit the application to us, and then in the thank you page, it comes up after the application, thanks for applying. To speed the process up, you need to get two of your references to fill out this reference form. And then we let them download that form, and it's up to them. If I never see reference forms, unless I'm really in need of that person, I never follow up with them. And if I do get reference forms back in, A, that means they're interested. Because even if someone was faking a reference form, it's easy enough to tell when after you've seen hundreds of them. And you can always follow up with a phone call to the person who fills out the form.
Yeah, I have to talk to everybody on the phone. So we actually used to have that form, like it was a paper version. So we had people fill it out, and I'd have to call and confirm it. And then people would be frustrated that I was like, wasn't my paper reference good enough for you? I was like, yes, I just was calling to confirm your thoughts. That's all. Make sure it was you. But I think.
And is that is that an internal policy that you had to call them?
Yeah, that's from my CEO. He wants us to call, and it's just something that he prefers. So yeah, so it's just something we live with in that sense.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that, guys. I wonder if we can move on to our links now. So for those of you listening, the links are the news that we've collected over the last 2 weeks about the camping and recreation industry and some things that we thought would be helpful for you as a camp director. Gab, I wonder if you could start with yours.
Yeah, sure. This was sent to me by email from a friend of mine, and it's our camp is... I wouldn't say we're completely unplugged from technology, because we do a slideshow at the end of the summer, and we allow our campers to have cameras, but they're not allowed to have cell phones and iPods and those kind of things. And so we try to you know, we always have those parents that kind of sneak in the cell phone as well. And we try to find different ways of convincing our even though our parents do send our kids to camp and they know we're unplugged, just to sort of get everybody on board. But this was a study done at the University of Maryland, and it was a study for 24 hours unplugged. That's what they called it, a day without media. And they wanted to see how 200 students could deal without being connected to the media one way or another. So either by iPod, television, you know, car radio, magazines, newspapers, so on and so forth. And so this study is very well broken down on what the experience was like for the students, and for the most part, students agreed that they were addicted to media and they needed to be connected. And it just shows how our decisions are being changed because we constantly have outside references instead of like internal thought patterns. So I thought it was just really interesting for personal reasons, and I thought it might be something that would be neat as a discussion with my staff members one evening when we decided to have different talks about society, and this might be something that we could talk about.
Nice. I definitely watched our staff have that withdrawal for the first few days.
I was reading somewhere, and I'm sorry I don't remember where, but it's sort of related, where a friend in camping of Gavin, Joe, and I, Jeff Bradshaw, was talking at a conference in Alberta. You know what it was? It was on one of the comments on Camp Nation, commenting on one of the shows. And Jeff's suggestion was that the kids are so attached to this stuff that maybe we need to give them some access to some of this stuff. And I don't know if he does it at his camp, Camp Winona in Bracebridge, Ontario, but his thing that he brought up at this talk he did in Alberta was maybe we should have a talk and text half hour or an hour in a day where kids can get their phones back and sort of get it out of their system and then focus on the day, the camp day without the stuff.
I think it's not a bad idea to explore. But I wonder if, like, I'll throw this out to you, Dan. You're saying that you definitely notice in your staff, and so have I, that when your staff come, they go through withdrawal. And I notice it in myself, too. Like, I'm not the exception. I love my iPhone. If anybody from iPhone is listening, they can send me a second. But I love my iPhone. I love my Mac. So I go through that withdrawal, too. But as the summer progresses, it's as if maybe our brain patterns, they don't need it as much. And so what I'm wondering is if, I guess my question out to you, Dan, is do you notice it? Yes, there's maybe we miss it at the beginning, but do you notice that your staff, you know, near the middle or after a couple of days, they're more relaxed? Or is it a constant sort of, I miss this stuff and I wish I had it throughout the summer?
No, they definitely are more relaxed. There's definitely times when they want it. But overall, you notice a difference in just how people are talking in the dining hall. Like when they're sitting with each other, like it seems like that the intimacy comes back a little bit in that sense. And they still have the technology in the sense of cameras and all that sort of thing. So they still are processing, you know, when they go like frog catching, it's not, they're just hunting for the frog. They're trying to take a picture of the frog they're going to hunt as well too. So it's, that's still part of that realm. But I definitely noticed people kind of detoxify in that sense. And kids have even commented on it as well. So,
yeah. I don't think it's something to say no to, but I think it's something to say, you know, why would I do that? Why would I give them half an hour a week or a day? Does this actually help, or does this actually continue?
But don't – yeah. So when I first got my iPhone, a buddy of mine sent me a – there's a Twitter shirt thing where they make a design a day, and it was ever since I got my iPhone, I poo differently. And it was the concept that it's a great shirt, and I couldn't order it because it didn't come in my size. But the concept and when you read up about things is, do you ever get overloaded with your iPhone? Do you ever say to yourself, why am I really looking at this? There's nothing really to see. You know, and trust me, I have it with me all the time, and I read books on it, but I'm like, do I really need to be doing this right now? And I think that part of what people, the mystique of camp is that you don't have the screens, the phones, the technology. People have this belief that camp is, that traditional residential summer camp is away from all of those things. So, you know, to set a computer lab up at camp would be a silly thing to do. But I think that, yeah, our staff hand their phones in on Sunday and get them back on Friday because our staff have the weekends mm-hmm. off. And we do notice some staff who choose to bring two phones, hand in one and keep the other. Yeah. And then I notice them as they leave without a job. So.
Do you make them a T-shirt when you as they go?
My phone yeah. got me fired.
One of our board members brought this up too. Is you know, is there a possibility that we might be losing campers because we don't offer this? You know, is this addiction so strong that they won't go away from home without yeah. it? You know, and it wasn't from a parent's standpoint. It was like, you know, at what point will the kids start revolting in that sense?
Yeah, and that's why I think it's important to listen to what Jeff is saying in the sense of maybe the once a week or once a day, like, you know, half an hour texting or whatever. We might have to go there. It's to keep your options open.
And I think what Jeff's implying is that we shouldn't say no before we think yeah. it through, right? We shouldn't say that it shouldn't happen. It's the same with, you know, the discussion of year-round schooling, all of those things. We should never just – our gut reaction is what a lot of people go with, and I think that people's gut reaction at camp is no way, no phones. Yeah. Well, okay, well, how would we implement it or what benefit would there be? So,
great. It's a good discussion, and I'm sure that some people are listening and driving their cars right now and just yelling at the radio for our opinions on this. So please leave us a comment. I'd like to figure out some way that we can have people send in MP3s. If somebody wants to do that, they can email it to me, which is travis@ourkids.net. But maybe that's one of my future plans is to get a phone line where people can leave us messages in response. But
yeah, that'd be cool.
I suspect this is a topic that people would like to respond to in some way. So please let us know. We'd love to hear how camp life is different since everybody got a cell phone and how you plan to deal with it. That'd be cool. Dan, what's your link?
Sure. It's a Time article titled How to Deprogram Bullies, Teaching Kindness 101. And basically, it talks about how you could teach about being a bully or teach how not to be a bully to infants and to toddlers. And it was an interesting article in the sense that it really talked about how you need to demonstrate this behavior. And I thought it was just so pertinent to camp in the sense that by demonstrating, like, there's just so many situations where I've watched camp professionals be bullies and not recognize, like, how they're bullying somebody into a decision. And if we're doing that on the staff level, you know, like, how we should be demonstrating this for our kids in that sense as well, too. But it's just really interesting, kind of breaks things down in that sense.
Very cool. So we'll have a link to all these original articles. Joe, what's yours?
Mine is one. This comes up through my Google alerts for summer camp. I found this this girl, I believe, who is blogging about. She just got a job at summer camp, and she writes a movie blog from her perspective. And she said, "What should I watch to get ready to work at summer camp? You know, what movies?" And I thought to myself, "No way!" And then she has all these YouTube links, and it is just, is this really? The question I had in my mind is this really the way that, you know, the way that media portrays working at camp? Is this really what we want people to be thinking? That you watch Meatballs and you're all set to work at camp? Or that you watch, you know, and it's just...
Wet Hot American Summer.
It's on the list. It's there.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those things where I was reading through her and, you know, she said, okay, well, Friday the 13th and all of those things. She was in the end naming a whole bunch of camp movies. And I was like, wow, it's really difficult to see how this could be perceived. But if we, if as you read through the list, I just can't think that we would let this be what our staff would see. Oh, you're coming to work at camp? Here, watch Meatballs. This is not anything like camp. It's an interesting little
yep.
read. Because if camp was a movie, this is what it made me think. If camp was a movie, would we be a comedy or would we be a drama?
Drama.
You know, would we be a movie or would we be a sitcom? Or, you know, there's whole, yeah, camp is much more drama than it is, and drama is a whole thing, but than it is comedy, although it's funny. It's like a romantic comedy.
I was going to say, my case, definitely romantic comedy. Emphasis on romantic.
Yeah, so I just thought it would be interesting. It's an interesting little read about, you know, that her thought was, my first thought upon hearing when I that I got the job was, all right, what do I watch to prepare myself for this?
And I think that's a, I think that's an interesting thought when it comes to staff that are hiring from outside of the camp industry. When they come from another camp, all I have to really worry about is, you know, what were it was that camp's traditions. Explain to this person our traditions and our philosophies, see if that matches. But when it's somebody, you know, I interviewed somebody yesterday that was works in the telemarketing industry, and she's studying to be a nurse. And she's like, yeah, I really like the outdoors. And I was just like, you have no idea. You know, so anyways, and then, you know, I really was trying to explain rustic. I said it over and over again. Like, I want her to know how rustic. And then, you know, then she asks, she's like, no, I totally get it. I totally get it. And then, you know, in another part of the conversation, she said, when it's really hot, do you turn up the air conditioning or? And I was like, you don't get it. You watched Meatballs. So.
I definitely have friends that that I've gone to college with, and I tell them I'm a camp director, and they're like, oh, is that like Janine Garofalo on What Hot American Summer? I'm like, no, not really. But the jokes she makes, though, like for like when you watch that movie with camp people, they identify with everything, you know, and the jokes that they make, not the actual like characters themselves. But
well, I think there's definitely a camp would be a great place on which to base a serious story. I think it has lots of good stories that come out of camp. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just sort of blow past my link very quickly. So it'll be in the show notes and you can see it. It's about a high school in Virginia where the editor of the high school yearbook was inspired by the Post Secret website. And so she solicited secrets from the students at her school, and the students really got into it, were really open about things and said of a lot of things that to my mind would give a real feeling of community. Like people can empathize with others who felt bullied, or the one that got them into trouble was that one of the students said, I had an abortion and my mom doesn't know. So they put all these things, printed them in the yearbook, and then somebody got upset, especially about the abortion thing, and they have to pull the yearbook. They're trying to get all of them back and they want to reprint them without these confessions. So it's kind of frustrating for me as someone who works with teenagers or has a history of working with teenagers that you have these kids finally opening up about something and you take it away from them.
Yeah.
Cool. So we'll go past that. I want to thank Will Shelton for commenting on the Facebook page at facebook.com/ourkidsgotocamp. Talking about the podcast, and he was asking if we'd spend some time and go a little deeper into tiered pricing, which is something that both Dan and Joe have experience with at their camps. So we want to talk about that a little bit more. And Dan, I know that you've got some stuff that you've done some research to get ready for this. So First of all, what's tiered pricing?
So basically tiered pricing, what it allows is the best way to say it is allows your parents to choose what they're going to pay. And it's not following, you know, what popular trend of music now is where like you could set the price at all. Basically you give them, for us, we give them three tiers. For instance, our highest camp tuition for 2 weeks is, $1,625. Our middle, camp tuition is $1,525, and our lowest camp tuition is $1,450. And then, written right below it, we have an explanation of why things cost that way. So, I'm going to read right from our registration form. Why three tuition fees? Frost Valley serves families with different abilities to pay. Tuition A and B more accurately account for true costs, including wear and tear and depreciation. This program is voluntary and in no way influences the experience children receive. 100% of additional fees from A and B rates fund facility replacements and improvements. And then it says, tuition C is our historically subsidized rate and does not reflect the true cost of camping. And then right below it says, there's no difference in the camp experience for your child, just to kind of reemphasize that. And so what we found is that we've been doing it for a few years now, and we found that parents actually will pay more. And so I have the statistics here. And 10% of parents will pay the highest rate. 23% of parents will pay the middle rate, and then the rest of that will pay the lowest rate. And so we've actually this year we've taken in an extra $55,000 in revenue with this tiered pricing. And we've been doing it for a few years, and definitely there was a lot of confusion the first year when we did it. Like, people are like, what are you doing? But now, you know, it's pretty simple to explain to parents, in the sense that since we're a nonprofit, we want everybody to come to camp, and we want to make it affordable for everybody. But I definitely think it's something that, you know, people outside being a nonprofit could do, and could ultimately help their bottom line as well too.
I wanted to ask, before I asked Joe sort of what his structure is, Dan, do you have like an early bird rate? I hate the word early bird, but do you have an early bird rate?
We offer this past year, our prices only went up $50. So from the summer to December 31st, if people registered, they saved $50 on their registration if they registered in that time period and paid in full by December 31st. So it wasn't a true incentive to sign up early in that sense, to kind of begin the pay in full. It was just more to kind of get their name in the door in that sense. We don't go too much into it because since we're a nonprofit, we try to advertise that we are offering the lowest rate possible at all times instead of really kind of pushing that early bird. And that's just something we do to kind of be respectful of other places that are not nonprofits.
Right. Thank you. So, Joe, like, what's the rate spread for you for your tiers?
Our rate spread is pretty simple. We have three tiers, and the lowest tier is for a week at camp, which is Sunday through Friday, is $240 for the week. That's tier one. And tier three goes up to $400 a week. And in between there, you have tier two at $320 a week. So we have quite a large, it's a $160 spread to go from tier one to tier three.
For a week. Yeah. Okay. And do you have any feel for sort of what percentage people pay at tier three, tier two, or tier one?
Yeah, we have, out of all, the first year we kept a lot more concise statistics because we were really interested in how it was going to work. And that year we had 27% of our camper parents chose to pay tier two or tier three. They paid above tier one. And since then, that number has not dropped off at all. So we're close to, right now, we're somewhere between 30 and 35% of our parents pay tier two or tier three. It's essentially as a reference, and I don't know what Dan's operating budget is or what your summer, I suppose summer camp revenues would be the better measurement. So if you're taking in, you said an extra $55,000. Mm-hmm. As a reference, in that first year that we tracked it, we took in an extra $10,000, which doesn't sound like a lot, but consider that our total income from summer camp programs was under $80,000. It becomes a huge percentage to take in an extra $10,000. And there was some of that confusion in that first year. In fact, there were people who swore that they would never come to camp again because we wanted them to pay more. Mm. And, you know, I made personal phone calls to families who we had heard this through, and they just they failed to get it that year. Some of those families have come back now and are paying tier three. And I'm not sure if that's just out of a guilt factor, but we're really adamant to say to them that no one knows what you pay. You know, my summer camp director doesn't know what you pay. You know, the only people who know are the office person and our accountants, right? Like, I can look it up, but it's unimportant to me. It's unimportant to me whether you pay tier one, tier two, or tier three. I just, you know, we want your kid at camp. And then we also offer that if you can't pay tier one, you know, we have an internal bursary fund where you can apply for assistance as well. So,
okay.
Nice.
And do you have any suggestions for camps that might want to start up perhaps a tier system from trial and error? Do you guys have any suggestions on what you would do?
I for sure do.
Yeah. You have to make it a smooth process.
Well, just a bit of history before from me, as I thought about this as early as the fall of 2005. I arrived here in June of 2005. It's been exactly 5 years that I've been here. And I thought about it because I had a conversation with Rob Carmichael from Camp Brain about the fact that how little people paid to go to camp. That was my, having moved from a private camp to here, it was just one of those things where you're like, wow, they pay almost nothing to come to camp for the week. And so he said, you know, I should check out the YMCA in Seattle. They had this tier-based pricing system. And so I called and went through all of that and brought it to the board of directors, and the board didn't let me implement it until the summer of 2008. So I went through two more summers without implementing the tier-based system because they wanted to explore it. They wanted to know how parents would react, all of those things. And I think getting a board on side is really important. And in the end, that first year, I don't care how well it goes, somebody's going to try and point a finger at the tier-based system and say that it lost us money or lost us campers. And we, the first year we implemented it, we lost 100 campers wow. out of 400
oh, wow.
and something. But that had nothing to do with, okay, nothing's a strong word. There were so many other factors involved because the economy, a lot of camps lost campers in 2009 and some in 2008. We in Southwestern Ontario, I pull from a small community called St. Thomas. And St. Thomas, in the years leading up to now, well, up till now, from the day I moved in 2005 till now, like something like 15 factories have closed in St. Thomas. So our unemployment rate is the highest, one of the highest in Canada. And so for me to lose campers, there's any variety of reasons that I could have lost those campers. And the majority of which is probably economic because we were before the downturn. In 2008, we were hugely affected by these things because it's one of those discussions you have as a group of with your board and with your public, the people who support you, is that if your program sucked in this tight of a community, you would know that your program sucked. You know what I mean? Like people would talk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they definitely, yeah. To you.
Yeah, it would get back to you. You suck. And that's not what the conversation that was happening in the community. And so we did a huge phone call a few days that summer and asked parents, you know, why didn't you come to camp? Just to try and get feedback. And a lot of it was, you know, we had to cut expenditures. We chose to go on vacation rather than come to camp. You know, there were a wide variety of things. Since then, our numbers went up in 2009. And this year, we're ahead by almost 100 campers from where we were at this point last year. So I've always tried to placate the board, and I'm not sure if placate's the right word, but to say to them that what we're building here is something good, but we're building it. It's not like you can just throw a tent in the air and poof, it's made. You have to build something. And so as long as we put the foundation under what we want, it will all come. And now with our tier-based system, today, 3 years in, we're still getting around that same percentage, paying more, but what we're also finding is a lot of returning campers are paying more, right? Who didn't pay in the past. So they might have paid tier one in the past, and now they moved up to tier two or tier three. And we also get new parents who think it's like God's gift that they get to choose what they want to pay. They can't believe that we're letting them choose. They're so grateful. So it's there's a bit of you want to approach it carefully, but you also want to remember that the cost to implement the program is $0. There's no cost to implement the tier-based pricing system.
I think a lot of it's just making sure you're communicating it well to your parents as well too. Like we definitely did not run into similar problems. We had people confused for the most part, and it was just a lot of phone calls.
Yeah.
But you know, it's definitely worth it, you know, to kind of get that extra bottom line to help keep the facility running and, you know, everything in that sense. So it's worked out for the benefit for us. I think, Joe, do you know if it was YMCA of San Diego that started it or was it YMCA of Seattle?
No, it's one of the two. Yeah, I believe you go back to San Diego because what happened is when I talked to the guy at the Y in Seattle, and I forget his name because this was years ago, he said, oh, we got it off the Y in San Diego.
Yeah, And I'm pretty sure it's Hawaii, San Diego, because we like literally copied that paragraph I read earlier verbatim from them. We asked them if we could, but I mean, it's their language, and it's worked out well for us. But it's definitely interesting when you're at a camp fair and people are like, how much is your camp? You're like, well, that's a funny question. And, you know, you get to choose, and they look at you weirdly and, you know, keep on going. So
right.
I don't know if you could do it in a private camp setting. I'm not sure why you would. And I'm not sure how it would be implemented. This comes back to the question of, a couple of podcasts ago I put the article up about the pricing strategy where he let people choose what to pay. And I think if people understand the value you give, they're more likely to pay you more. And so I think that's where we get camper families who, after having their camper at camp for a couple of summers, understand the value that camp is, and so they'll gladly pay more at that point. And they might be in a different situation, and that's great. So
I think that article, Joe, though, might prove the fact that you could do it in a private situation. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you, Gab, if you think so. But that article would say once people understand the value of what you have, so families that have come to camp, no matter who the overarching organization is, private or agency or religious, they understand the value of what you're providing and then may be willing to pay to help with a little more sustainability. What do you think, Gab?
I mean, we've been thinking about it lightly to try it out with our women's weekends. Because our women's weekends is very inexpensive. And the reason why we made it as inexpensive as possible is we really wanted to provide something where all women could go and participate in. And it's not all women that have the means to, you know, just say, hey, I have this amount of money to spend, you know, for a weekend. They don't all have it, and we wanted that to provide that for women. So we started thinking, you know, but we had other women that were just like, this is too inexpensive. You know, we want to give a little bit more. We really appreciate what you're doing, and just donations just seemed like a very bizarre thing to do. And when we talked about the tiered system a couple of podcasts ago, that's when we really started thinking about, is this something that we can do with our women's weekends? And I think we'd try it with that. And then as for our summer camp, compared to Ontario, our fees are about par with private camps, but compared to our other Quebec camps, we're looked upon as one of the most expensive camps in Quebec. And I don't know if having a different financial scale, what that would do to our clients in Quebec, if they would think, wow, this is really neat, or if it's like, you know, because we do have it at a price where it supports our camp and we're not rolling in it at the same time. So I'm not quite sure how it would work that way. But I mean, I'm interested in it. I don't know. I think it's very interesting. I think a private camp should look at it, though, you know, because like you said, some parents might be willing to say, you know what, this is, my kid gets some great stuff from your organization. I want to put some money towards, you know, whatever new building you're building next year. I'd like to go for Section A or whatever the cost more, you know, price range.
And I think people in different areas have a very different sense of what camp should cost.
Yeah.
Because when I came and I said that what we charge doesn't cover the true cost of camp, my office manager at the time said, no, it does. I'm like, how can it possibly? And what happened is I filled out an application to become a United Way agency, and I did the math. You know, I separated every line in the budget out to say, okay, well, my salary, how much is summer camp and how much is rentals? Okay, so let's go 50-50. And how much is every line in the budget? And then I did, you know, the cost, did that for the revenues and the expenditures, and came up with a $68,000 loss on summer camp. And I was like, okay, that's a lot, you know, considering that the cost, you know, that we take in, or let's say $80,000 in camp fees every summer, and we, to put on summer camp following that model, we pay out, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of $160,000 or $140,000, you know, like, and when I put it in those words and had that budget in front of me, the board was like, wow, we do really subsidize camp. And I said, yeah, we do, but that's our mission. Our mission is to run a subsidized camp so that people of all you know, everywhere can afford it. And the challenge with a private camp gab would be, okay, well, the rate that you have now, mm-hmm. is that, what tier is that? Is that, because in a lot of private camps, what, or in a lot of non-for-profits, I think, who have implemented tier-based pricing, they never lowered their, you know, I'm not sure, Dan, if you know that, whether you did, but I didn't lower my tier one, like 240 oh, yeah. was the base. And then I moved up from there.
Yeah, we and didn't lower ours either.
And then my question is, if you're going to, when you, Dan, when you increase fees at camp, do you increase all tiers?
We do. When we do an increase, it's typically $50 across the board. For instance, our price, I'm guessing next year will be, you know, instead of $1,450, it'll be $1,500 and moving up from there for everything. So, but it all kind of depends on what our CFO decides and our CEO decides at the end. But we really try to get as many people in the door as possible, and we offer a tremendous amount of camperships. We call them scholarships. Yeah. So,
and I wonder if one of the things, I've been here 5 years, and one of the things I can say is I've never raised our fees. $240 is still the fee if you want to pay it. But part of me also says, okay, well, if I were to raise fees, do I need to raise all three, or do I make the gap wider? And I don't know.
So, Joe, you haven't raised prices in 5 years.
This is a great way to look at the tier-based system, Travis. Yeah. I have not changed the $240 because Southwestern Ontario is like this little anomaly in the camp world, this big anomaly, where people don't want to pay mm-hmm. more for camp. Mm-hmm. And part of that is the United Church. Okay, so the United Church of Canada, and we're United Church of Canada camp, they have 8 summer camps from Woodstock to Windsor and from St. Thomas to Goderich. So it's this area that I can drive to 7 other summer camps within 2 hours from my front door that are all United Church of Canada summer camps.
Right. Oh, wow.
It's a little bit overexposed, saturated? Or oh, saturated. Yeah, that would work. So part of it is that you have all of these other camps who are at the time when I arrived, Travis, mm-hmm. $240 was $50 ahead of every other United Church camp.
That's insane.
It is, and you know from years at Glenmore and Cairn that it's just, you have to find a way to be profitable or else you will fail,
right.
You know, and that's where a lot of denominational or religious camp programs who run multiple camps go through decisions to close camps, right? That one camp would be better and all of those things. So no, I haven't raised fees in 5 years. But if you look at the tier-based payment system, that if I make an extra, and last year I think I made $12,000 or $13,000 more mm-hmm. than I would have had I only paid. And so that's like a, you know, that's a $10 or $15 increase per camper,
right.
if I was to do it.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Okay.
Joe, my only concern with that would be, you know, when, you know, there's going to be a time when you're going to have to raise them. And when you do, like, is that going to be such a shock to your demographic, you know? Like, that's why we raise our prices $50 every year for the past few years, just because, you know, like, you know, if we waited a few years, then we would just kind of catch up to that cost. But this way, it's not such a shock and blow to everybody.
That's a conversation we have. Part of the methodology in my thinking, Dan, is that when you're building something or when mm-hmm. you're repairing something that might have been damaged when I arrived, right, if the reputation was not as strong as it could have been, that you want people to understand the value you give to the community. And
oh,
so
okay.
And if we're there now, now I can start saying, okay, well, let's raise it by a certain dollar amount per year or a certain percentage per year. So the way your CFO is doing it by going, and I'm not saying anything against your CFO if he listens to the podcast, but
sorry, Jim.
What you're doing is you're actually increasing it less and less every year, because percentage wise, it sounds the same. It's $50 every year, but you're taking less and less percent every year of an increase. So eventually you're going to get down to that it's this minuscule increase, and you're going to have to change it as well. Does that make sense?
I gotcha. No, yeah, I'm following you on that, yeah.
And I'm not saying that this is perfect. I have found a whole bunch of other one of my jobs is to go out and find other funding for camp, you know, so becoming United Way agency, finding additional funds to run other projects and staff grants and all of those things. So we've saved a ton of money by finding that money. Does that make sense? Like, I've saved money on my operating by finding money to cover things that we had never, that money we had never found before. So, you know, this year alone for staffing grants, I have over $33,000 in staffing grants this year.
Nice.
As a reference, I hire 35 staff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it pays a lot of my summer camp staff. You know, my full staffing cost for a summer is around $50,000 for what we pay. So,
wow.
Well, maybe a topic for a future one is, hey, Joe, where'd you find all that money? I want to move us on, but Dan or Joe, do you have any other thoughts that you didn't get out that you wanted to just add into the tiered pricing discussion before we move to the picks of the week?
Just if you're that concerned about affecting your families, I would just survey your families and see if they're open to it. You know, most families are pretty responsive of getting an honest opinion in that sense.
Cool.
And I think the same thing that, you know, we never surveyed our families. We just kept informing them that this is a true cost of camp. And then one year we sent it out. I think that there's a big fear attached to doing it. And I think that and Dan will probably attest to the fact that they might be confused, but they're not angry. Out of all of our families, we had one or two that were full on angry, but there were lots of people who were like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a fear, and if you have a board of directors, they can be very fearful of it, but you need the financials to back it up, and that's the key.
Yeah, and for us, it's just I like it because it's an easy way for me to say, like, this is us practicing our mission and really show it as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, guys, I'm really grateful that you're so willing to be so open about your numbers and things. Like, I think it helps a lot. It will help people who are trying to pitch it to their own boards or owners. And I'm grateful that you did that. Thanks for sharing.
Not a problem.
Not a problem.
Cool. Let's move on then to our picks of the week. So our pick of the week is a tool that will make you a better camp director. And Joe, what do you got?
Travis and I actually talked about this a few weeks ago when I was in the ARCID studio saying, had we made Cool Tools a pick? And I looked through the old stuff and I couldn't see it. Have you ever seen it, Travis?
Nope.
I couldn't see us using it as a pick.
Yet.
So Cool Tools is, I was first introduced to Cool Tools through a book that Travis had at his house one day, because Kevin Kelly, who is the founding editor, one of the founding editors of Wired magazine, and is a great interview to listen to, he used to sell a book version of this. But Cool Tools is a website where essentially they have cool tools. And it's not tools as in, you know, like drills, and it's just cool things to use. It could be a book, it could be a piece of equipment. It could be he has them split into various categories as well. So you have toys and productivity, and there's a whole list. It's just a great website to subscribe to with an RSS reader, and it's also a great website to sort of lose yourself in for a little while to sort of find interesting things. So I recommend Cool Tools.
It looks really awesome.
Yep.
Yes, I've had a long-term love affair with Cool Tools. It's a great site. Great site. Gab, what's your pick?
My pick is a book titled Shackleton's Way, Leadership Lessons from the Great Antarctic Explorer. And Shackleton was an explorer, but also I think probably an amazing leader. And he attempted to cross the Antarctic three times and failed, but what he did successfully was he kept all of his men alive, which pretty much every other explorer that tried to do that failed to do. And he was able to keep them all alive and in good spirits for 18 months while they were trapped on the ice. And two business people of the business mind thought had taken his expedition and taken all the lessons that that they learned from reading from his journals and all that kind of stuff, and built a leadership and team building book on all of his lessons. And I just finished reading it. It also comes in audiobook, but it's really powerful, and I think that it speaks in a lot of on if you just take care of people and if you teach them to take care of each other, then you can have a successful team. And it's a wonderful read with a little bit of adventure in it too. And you can get it on Amazon.com. So, I really enjoyed this book.
Thank you.
It's a great book. Just a quick comment. Years ago, when I was at the Taylor Statton camps, one of our family campers actually was on the documentary crew that filmed a movie about Shackleton. And it's fascinating. The whole story is just amazing,
yeah.
Amazing. So well worth it.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks, Gab. Dan, what's your pick?
My pick is a new show that's on MTV. It's called Hired. And it's a documentary series. And basically it takes you through a job application process. And I think this is a great show to kind of refer kids to. It's completely appropriate. The first segment is they meet a kind of a hiring coach, and they talk through an interview and they talk about their resume. The second step is they go through a first round interview, and then the third step is they go through a second round interview, and then it shows. Basically, it does it from the employer perspective as well too. So it actually tells kids why they didn't get the job, and by kids I mean recent college grads, and they actually, it's really dead on. Like, I have not found anything I have disagreed with at all in the show, and I've watched about 4 episodes. And I think it's just a really great resource to kind of point kids to and reminding them that they have to be professional, even when they're applying for a camp job. So, and that this is a good reference if you want to watch something.
Very cool.
That's awesome.
So do they show people that don't get hired as well as do get hired?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They basically, they'll start with the pool of, like, I think about like 10 to 15 applicants, and then they whittle it down. By the second interview, it's just 3 applicants, and by the end of it, it's just, you know, obviously one mm-hmm. person. But
right on.
Yeah,
that sounds great. So, speaking of work, my pick is a book that's been out for about a month. It's called Rework, and it's by Jason Fried and David Hannemeyer Hansen, who run a company called 37 Signals at 37signals.com. And it's sort of a well-known internet company that does productivity stuff. And I think we've touched on a couple of 37 Signals products in different discussions. But they have a really different way of looking at how an office should run. And they run theirs really quite loose. Like, not a lot of structure, not a lot of planning. But that's allowed them to be flexible enough to make changes without sort of upsetting everything, and it's allowed them to be quite nimble and make changes. And in fact, their business model is selling these different productivity things and customer relationship management software and things like that. Not at all what they went into business to do. They just created these products for themselves to manage their own web design stuff and found that it was actually better than what they were doing, and they made more money, so they just switched. And there's nice. Tons of nuggets. I mean, whenever I read books that are related to work or marketing, what I consider sort of business books, I always read them with a pen and fold the page over and make notes on the page, etc. I think that's how I know if it's a good book, if it's got lots of dogged pages with lots of scribbles and underlines. And this one, it was sort of about 50-50, sort of half of it I could relate to and I thought was amazing, and half of it I didn't. So it was good that way. I totally didn't buy into everything, but it definitely made me think. And the one nugget that I took out of this is something I've also seen elsewhere in a business book recently. It's talking about marketing and how everybody in the world can advertise, but not everybody can teach. And no matter what industry you're in and who you're selling to, teaching people about your product or things related to your product is a great way of marketing that shows your leadership. And it's such a great idea. It's exactly how I feel about marketing in general. And I think with camp, teaching something we do very naturally, and it's an opportunity that camps have to do inexpensive marketing by teaching and doing videos and podcasts and all sorts of things you could do as a camp to market. And teaching is very effective, and it's something that we do naturally. So I love that bit of that book.
That's awesome. I listened to that book a couple of weekends ago. It's only 3 hours, the audiobook.
Oh, cool.
And it's it goes by so fast, and there's so much that you can take out of it. So it's an awesome read.
And listening to it, I'm sure is good, and I might listen to it myself. But I'm such a visual person. I love the book because it's very short chapters, often just one page, but it's full of illustrations. They have somebody who's done like pencil style drawings
nice.
To illustrate each one of their points. So each one has a little, often a full page illustration to go with it. And that just sort of adds to the book and, you know, it's part of what I like about it.
It's so visual. Great.
Well, thank you very much, everybody. As we say goodbye, why don't I get everybody just tell us where we can find you on the net. Dan?
So I work for Frost Valley YMCA, which is frostvalley.org. I blog at danlovescamp.com and also campnation.ca. And I Twitter at danlovescamp.
Excellent. Gab?
And I work at Camp Waro, and that's waro.com. And you can find me online at GabrielleRail.com or I Twitter at GabrielleRail.
And Joe?
Awesome. I work at Pierce Williams Christian Center. You can find us online at campisbetter.com. You can find my own personal stuff at yoyojoe.com. You can find me on Twitter at yoyojoer, and I try to blog a bit at Camp Nation as well.
Very cool. Thank you. And I'm Travis Allison, and you can find me online at ourkids.net/blog and the Camp Nation blog. And I Twitter professionally at twitter.com/ourkidsnet. And personally, which tends to have more of a camp focus than the work one, which I spread out all the things I Twitter about there. My personal Twitter is twitter.com/Zoic, Z-O-I-C, or Z-O-I-C for those of you listening south of the border. A couple of things before we say goodbye. I want to thank those camps that have been involved in our video contest on Facebook. It ends May 31st, so by the time this gets posted, it'll be over. And Joe, I'm sorry I wasn't able to get your video online. It would have been me voting for myself, so I feel badly that
did it. Did you watch it at least? Did one person see it? That's the
yes,
question.
I saw so. It was a lovely tribute to your wife.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So thanks to those who've been a part of that. And if you want to be part of our camp community, there's people have been putting great comments at facebook.com/ourkidsgotocamp and on the blog at campnation.ca. And there's a couple things that I just want to draw your attention to, especially on the blog. One is an article that I wrote called Next Year's Summer Camp Marketing Now. And some ideas of things you've been doing right now to be marketing for next year that just take advantage of inexpensive and social media things. So there's that. I want to thank our long-suffering audio editor, Donovan Romanek, from whereitsatproductions.ca. And I haven't heard podcast number 11 yet, so we're waiting for that to come back from Don. Excited to hear that this week. And the other thing I did just today, had made a note to myself to do it when we talked about it two or three podcasts ago. I set up an account on FormSpring for Camp Nation. So if people want to ask questions, either anonymously or not, about how the four of us or any resources that we can find in our connections would deal with a situation at camp, then you can ask it there, and it'll be tied to the ourkids.net Twitter account as well. So that's at formspring.me/campnation. And you can ask the four of us anything you want. And if we can't answer it, we'll find somebody who can. So any final words from the three of you?
No, I'm just looking up the FormSpring right now.
Yeah.
Cool. I just put it up this afternoon, so I don't think there's anything there yet, but hopefully will take advantage of that. We want to offer our services the best we can. So I thank you for the three of you for meeting up with me on Skype today. It's nice for me to be back, and I'm also glad to have just the four of us. It's kind of bring it back in the family for an episode, although yeah. I very much like having special guests on, and want to have some of the ones that we've had on before back. So we'll make an effort to do that as we keep going. So to our listeners, I say thank you very much for downloading the Camp Nation podcast. Make sure you check out the show notes at campnation.ca. And thanks for the evening, friends.
All right, thanks a lot.
Yep, not a problem.
Take care, guys.
This Camp Nation podcast was brought to you by Our Kids Go to Camp magazine and the camps.ca online summer camp directory. Thanks for listening.